780 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 30th of March, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. It's time for news, views, stuff you can lose, things you can do's. We'll start with the news. The MacBook Air went first. A tiny Fujitsu laptop running Vista was hacked on the last day of the contest, but it was Linux running on a Sony Vaio that remained undefeated as conference organizers ended a three-way computer hacking challenge Friday at the CanSec West Security Conference. Earlier this week, contest sponsors had put three laptops up for grabs to anyone who could hack one of the systems and run their own software. A $20,000 cash prize sweetened the deal, but payout was halved each day as contest rules were relaxed and it became easier to penetrate the computers. On day two, independent security evaluators Charlie Miller took the Mac after hitting it with a still undisclosed exploit that targeted the Safari web browser. Oops. After about 2 minutes work Thursday, Miller took home $10,000 courtesy of 3Com's Tipping Point division in addition to his new laptop. It took 2 days of work, but Shane McCauley finally cracked the Vista box on Friday with a little help from his friends. McCauley, who was a co-winner of last year's hacking contest, needed a few hacking tricks courtesy of VMware researcher Alexander Sidorov to make his bug work. That's because McCauley hadn't been expecting to attack the Service Pack 1 version of Vista, which comes with additional security measures. He also got a little help from co-worker Derek Calloway. Under contest rules, McCauley and Miller aren't allowed to divulge specific details about their bugs until they are patched. But McCauley said the flaw that he exploited was a cross-platform bug that took advantage of Java to circumvent Vista's security. The flaw is in something else, but the inherent nature of Java allowed us to get around the protections that Microsoft had in place. This could affect Linux or Mac OS X as well. McCauley said he chose to work on Vista because he had done contract work for Microsoft in the past and was more familiar with the product. Although several attendees tried to crack the Linux box, nobody could pull it off. Miller said he chose to hack the Mac because he thought it would be the easiest target. Vista hacker McCauley didn't dispute that assertion. I think it might be, he said. So, interestingly, it was a flaw in Safari, which Apple is, of course, still pushing to every platform, whether we want it or not.
Well, the big question that is bouncing around the Mac boards on that is, was it the Safari 3.1 that includes a bunch of security updates, or was it the older 3.0 that didn't?
According to the contest rules, it was all the newest software on every machine.
Right, but the new version came out the same week of the contest. So we don't know. And it's interesting that neither platform was broken by its built-in security. When they relaxed the rules, it was, I'll send you an email and you have to click the link or you have to do some user interaction. So, you know, someone sends you an email that says, enter your username and password.
Right.
They did.
Well, and we have people who do that all the time.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, we're programmed to obey signs, even bad signs.
Yeah.
Well, I got a big scam going on right now that a lot of folks are getting suckered into it. I've had a number of clients where they're being told because they particular sites that they visit that then they get the screen, their whole background screen changes, which is part of the Trojan job, lets you know you're infected. You got to go to this website to remove it. To remove it, you got to pay $29.95 or $19.95.
Only $29.95. We'll clean your system.
Yeah. And, oh,
of all your credit card information and your personal data and your bank account.
No, they just want to get the $29.95. And then they claim that, you know, their software will remove it.
Yeah, if you're lucky, they're stealing just the $29.95.
Yeah. But they're making one. You think about it. You know, you get just, say, 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You do that type of scam times 29.
Well, yeah, and you can send it out to millions of people, you know, tens of millions of people very easily. And you can get 10,000 hits real easy.
That's why I still don't believe, you know, the number of folks that fall for the thing. I got it just a couple yesterday. From HSBC, and I also got it from PayPal, and a few other places telling me, oh, they're doing a security update, and I got to fill out this form. Yeah, right. there's a term called something freezing over before I fill it out.
Yeah, right.
It's just not going to happen. And anybody that sits there and doesn't pick up the phone and verify it before going online, hello, with all the scams out there, I want to talk to a real person.
Yep, that's fair.
The law enforcement people used to call it extortion. So where's Elliot Spitzer when you need him?
He's a little sure busy at the moment.
No answer to that whatsoever. Whatsoever.
Yep.
But yeah, I think you're right. The problem is we have become complacent about our computers. You know, nobody would walk down the street with and hand their ID to the first person they see.
I remember
maybe you would.
Well, no, I remember seeing an old version of Dragnet, the old Dragnet from the 60s, and they were talking about this big scam.
50s.
50, yeah, even. So I was watching it as in reruns in the 60s.
Yes, you were.
And some guy had this bright idea to go to the night deposit box of the bank, this was long before ATMs, and say, you know, slot broken, and put a cardboard box with a sign on it saying, slot broken, put your deposits here. He'd go back in the morning and pick up all the deposits.
Yep.
Well, where's the one? They just busted one just a couple days ago. I think it was over in Greece. They discovered this one ATM.
Yeah, well, a real ATM with a counterfeit reader on the front of it.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually, you can buy those on the internet, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
That happens fairly regularly. But I'm talking about the whole deal where, you know, you go to a website, it says, give us your username and password, and people do. You know, if you haven't personally typed in that address, or pulled it up from your bookmarks where you originally first personally typed it in, you cannot be certain that you're in the right place. And even then, you can't be entirely certain that you're in the right place.
They make it look so authentic.
Right.
You know, it's unbelievable.
All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Kim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Kim. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have two laptops. One's an IBM and the other's a Dell. And I'm living in Greece just temporarily, so all I have is dial-up connection over the phone lines. While I was home visiting my parents, I tried to connect into the internet using a cable modem. And both of them, they recognized the connection. I can bring up Internet Explorer. I can access the website, but as soon as I click on any other link or go to another page,
what would the website be?
Back to the original dial-up connection.
Yeah, what would the website be?
Could be Google. Could be
All right.
My bank. Could be a bicycle website that I went to.
In the internet properties in your internet control panel, you set the priority order of how you connect to the internet, whether you want dial-up first and then your network, or network first and then dial-up. So that computer is set to do dial-up first. So when it sees a network connection, it ignores it and still uses dial-up.
Well, so usually in the network connections, there's three options. Don't connect at all.
Right. You know, connective network not present is what you want it set to. You probably have it set to always connect. So it's always using the dial-up to try to connect.
Okay. And where again do I see this?
Under control panels, under internet, under connections.
Okay.
That lists the order of your connections. Back in the olden days when you may have two or three dial-up connections, depending on which one you wanted to connect to at any given moment.
Right.
So you have to tell it to only use the dial-up when there's a network present.
Under internet properties, one of the tabs is connections. In the connections, they'll be listed if you have a dial-up service, and the three options are never dial a connection, dial whenever a network connection is not present, or always dial my default connection.
Okay.
And you want it set to the middle one.
The middle one is what you want.
Okay, thank you very much.
And that's very common for laptop users when they're in their office, when they're at a hard connection.
Yep.
You want it to use the Ethernet port out through the LAN connection, and when you're on the road or on a open area, you may want it to use your Wi-Fi hotspot, and then if all else fails, you'll dial the modem.
Right. All right, our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a son who's going off to college in the fall, and we're contemplating whether to get a Mac or a laptop. And I guess my biggest concern is the operating system. Should we go with the Vista or the Mac's operating system?
Well, I think you should go with Linux.
No, sorry. All right.
Well, or get a Mac, and you can run Mac and Unix and, right, and Linux and Windows.
Here's the deal. The big question is, who is going to be
the
his support group?
And what is he going to be studying?
Okay, well, he doesn't need a high-powered Mac with visuals. He's going for business management. And so
well, he wants to talk to the folks in the business management department.
Yeah.
They may prefer a Windows machine.
Okay.
Because there is a lot of software, for example, SAS and statistical packages like that, that are not available in the other operating systems, but only available there.
Okay.
So he should talk to the folks in the business management. I'm the systems administrator for the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And thank you. And consequently, I know a little bit about what they would prefer you to use in business circumstances.
And you can still get even laptops without Vista.
Oh, would you?
It's getting harder, though.
Right. Is that an issue? Is the Vista that bad that I should?
Well, Vista is not at its best just yet. Well, however, the big question, again, comes back to the school. Are they supporting Vista? There are some schools that are not yet allowing Vista on their networks.
And we had a call last week from a school that was requiring Vista, but then it wouldn't work with the printers. It wouldn't work with the servers. Mm-hmm. Oh, Vista in and of itself isn't really that bad. It's trying to connect to your printer, connect to your server. Connect to your scanner, connect
and if
to
they
camera.
Have Active Directory in the back, will the Macs work with Active Directory at all? Yeah. The Macs will. Will hello, hi, how are you?
Vista, yeah.
Will Vista work with it at all? If it's a plain vanilla AD, yes. For example, at RIT, they've done some interesting things to it, and consequently, it's a little harder.
I just had a client this week that I had to go down to and try to install the UPS software, and within this UPS software, it clearly has a little tag in there. It says will not run under Vista.
All right, Jim. The bottom line is you got to talk to the college in the before your son or daughter goes there. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. Each and every one of you, 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
Give me that mic. I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are certainly Soundbites. A million search queries have been poisoned at dozens of well-known websites over the past several weeks, according to security analyst Dancho Danchev, which I love that person's name. I don't know if it's a man or a woman, a chicken, a duck. I don't know. It's a giant chicken. Attackers, it's a chicken, a giant chicken.
Okay. He's everywhere.
Attackers are using programming errors to hijack keyword searches by automatically attaching malicious HTML code to specific search queries. Unwitting visitors who type in the selected keywords while performing a search at the affected sites are then redirected to booby-trapped websites. This is where the attacker attempts to install malware onto the victim's computers. Among some of the websites that have been attacked are USA Today, Target.com, ABCNews.com, Walmart.com, and several sites owned by CNET Networks, the publisher of News.com. A CNET employee confirmed that the attacks had occurred, but did not know to what extent it had affected site visitors. Walmart spokeswoman Amy Colella on Saturday said the matter had not impacted our site in any way, incorrectly using impact as a verb. We take these matters very seriously at Walmart.com and continuously use measures to protect our customers from any fraudulent online activity. The attack differs from other iframe injection attacks in that the traps are being set in the search results and not on a website's main pages. That means that a web user would need to use a search query using one of the terms picked by the attacker to hit a poisonous page. This is in contrast to previously seen attacks where just visiting the site could launch an attack. This reduces the severity of the most recent attacks somewhat. Evers added that the web is quickly becoming one of the most popular means to attack users. This is due to, in part, to improvements made to email security and filtering, and also because web vulnerabilities are a new frontier. So now you can't even trust searches done at many popular websites.
Wow.
Oops. You can always trust searches at AskNick.com, except for one guy who seems to be unable to search. And, of course, searching using the search stuff through Soundbites always works correctly, because we're way too small to be targeted by any of those people.
We're a little blip.
All right, back to the phone. We have Dee from Masseter, New York. Welcome, Dee. What's your question? Dee, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Dee.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been having some keyboard problems.
Oh, well.
About a week, my computer's about a year old. It's an Acer Aspire. The keyboard also is about a year old. About a week ago, the keyboard stopped working.
Okay.
So I unplugged it from the USB port.
Mm-hmm.
Plugged it back in, didn't work, unplugged it, plugged into a different USB port, and it started working, no problem. About a week went by, and it stopped working again. In that other USB port, so I unplugged it, put the mouse in the old one, found the old one was working again, so I plugged the keyboard back into the old USB port, and it's working again. But I'm not sure, is it the USB ports that are failing? Is it the keyboard that's failing?
Have you tried looking for drivers for the keyboard? Updated drivers?
No. When I go to the troubleshoot USB device problem,
mm-hmm.
and then I click on the device manager,
yeah.
and then I click on my keyboard thingy, mm-hmm. it says it's working properly.
You're saying you're switching it out, and if you put the mouse in that port, the mouse still works where the keyboard was, correct?
That's sort of the way USB works. When you unplug a USB device, and then specifically when you plug it back in again, it says, oh, I'm here, use me now.
Yeah.
And so it could be the USB on the motherboard, or it could be that keyboard and mouse.
It could also be a simple problem with static.
Yeah.
Static interrupting the signal, or the system thinks it's not in there anymore until it gets unplugged.
I've been getting static shocks off my plastic computer.
Yes.
That's a really strong charge.
Do you get static charges in your home?
Not that I really can. No.
One other thing. Have you run like super anti-spyware? I'm wondering if it could be a keylogger program.
Well, after the first time the thing didn't work, I blamed it on my son for getting a virus or something. So sure, I did exactly. A whole big virus thingy on my computer and ran all that stuff, and it didn't come up with anything.
Yeah, but not a virus program. It could be a Trojan, like a keylogger.
Okay.
So you want to run more than just an antivirus program. If you run, say, like Super Anti-Spyware, Adware, and SpyBot,
okay.
You run those in case it is a keylogger. What a keylogger program is literally it's capturing all your keystrokes, and then it sends it out to the person that created it, and it can capture a lot of your personal information without you knowing it.
That's not good.
So you definitely want to check for that because, like I say, it could be one of those.
Okay.
And another thing to check is a completely new new to that computer USB device, keyboard or mouse, and see what happens there. That might help you trace whether it's the computer or the keyboard.
Okay.
Computer.
I have the Windows Live OneCare thing. Can I find a...
Windows Defender is antivirus. Is it also anti-spyware?
No. That's about as helpful as a screen door in a submarine. So, like I say, go get the products that we recommend.
Okay.
I mean, Gates should stick to what he does, and that's build operating systems, not try to do this other stuff.
Hire other people.
Yeah, hire other people. He bought that from somebody.
All right, so what was the spyware you recommended again?
If you go to our website, we've got them on there. Adware, SpyBot, and Super Anti-SpyBot.
Super Anti-SpyWare.
If you go to the securitytango.com.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
You're
welcome.
Thank
you. All right, our next caller is Jackie from Williamson, New York. Welcome, Jackie. What's your question?
My question is, I have a picture that my sister sent me that's in Adobe file. When I open that picture up, I cannot open it. It does not come up just as a picture. It's in the Adobe Square, and I want to change that to JPEG, and I have no idea how to do that.
What do you mean Adobe? Is it the Adobe Photoshop format?
Well, it's in a little square.
In your browser?
Yeah.
That means you don't have the program that file was created in. So you have to ask her what program she used. If she used Adobe Photoshop, then either you have to have Photoshop to convert it, or she has to convert it and send it to you again.
Ask her to export it out as a JPEG.
Yeah, she would have to send it to you again as a JPEG. If she sent you a Photoshop file, you must have Photoshop on your computer to open it.
Okay.
It's a lot easier than you buying the software. Just have her export it.
Wait. I think the GIMP will open it.
Will the GIMP open Photoshop?
I don't know.
Do you know what the name of the full name of the file is, including the extension?
I don't.
Yeah, if .psd is a Photoshop file. .jpeg would be a JPEG file. So she could be using Photo Deluxe, any of the Adobe Photo Suites.
Any of those.
And if you don't save it as a generic format like JPEG, then the person at the other end can't open it unless they have the program you used.
Okay, so she should change it to a JPEG and then send it to me from her end.
Right. That would be the easiest.
Right. Especially since Photoshop is a $700 program.
Yeah.
She may not be using that, so it could be Photoshop Elements or Photo Deluxe. Well,
who knows?
But, you know, using whatever the proprietary format of that program is.
If it is a PSD file,
yeah.
GIMP will open it, although some of the blending things, which probably weren't used in this thing.
Yeah.
Okay, what she sent me, it was Adobe.pdf.
Oh, that's an Acrobat file. So you have to have the Acrobat reader to view that.
That's okay. Free.
The Acrobat reader is free. Go to acrobat.com and follow the instructions to download the reader.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's also at adobe.com, but then you have to find the Acrobat button. It's easier if you just go right to acrobat.com.
Okay, great. So go to acrobat.com and...
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
PDF is a portable document format.
Thank you, Jackie.
And that was designed to help people overcome this issue that you can create a PDF on your computer and anyone can read it with the free reader on their computer. They don't have to have your program.
Right. All righty. Thanks, Jackie. Our next caller is RJ from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, RJ. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Love your show.
Thank you.
I've got a Silver Mac, 867 megahertz, 768 of SD RAM, and I just updated to the Tiger 10.4.11, and now I've got freeze-up issues with Safari, iTunes, occasionally the Finder, sometimes Word, and I keep getting the spinning rainbow wheel, and so I try the Command, Option, Escape, but sometimes the window doesn't even come up, and when it does come up, it quits, but it didn't quit, so I keep quitting again and again and again, then I got to do a hard reset. And I just wonder, what can I do?
How much RAM did you say it had?
768.
Yeah, that's probably enough. There are some basic diagnostic programs you can run. The Disk Utility in the Utilities folder has two diagnostics, Verify Disk and Verify Permissions.
Yeah, you know, I've done that, and everything comes up okay.
Okay, so it's probably a conflict with some other software. Do you have any third-party system extensions loaded? LabelX or WindowShade? If you open your System Preferences under the Apple menu,
right.
If there's anything in the Other line, at the bottom of the preferences, those are third-party programs. And any of those may be causing compatibility issues, and you may need to have those get updated.
Huh.
So that it sounds like there's a compatibility issue of some sort, or possibly a, I'd hate to say a coincidental hardware failure, something going wrong in the hard drive or the RAM.
Right. Well, I'm just wondering if maybe it's just time to replace computers.
RJ, what did you upgrade from? What was your operating system before you went to Tiger?
I started with Tiger 10.1, you know, and then I've been updating as they've introduced the updates. Everything worked flawlessly until I went to the 0.11.
Well, do you mean 10.1 or do you mean Tiger 10.4.1?
10.4.1. Okay. I bought every update.
Yeah, the greater the difference from your old version to the new version can cause more issues.
No, I went from 10.4.1 to 0.2 to 0.3.
All the way along, yeah.
Better upgrade path.
One of the things you can try is what's called an archive install, which takes your current system folder and archives it off and gives you a brand new system folder, and then see how well that works.
Oh.
Actually, what you can do before that, I always forget this step, make a new user and see if the same problems happen in that new user.
Okay.
And that will let you know whether it's a user-level problem or a system-level problem.
Okay.
And if the problems do exist in the new user, then try the archive install, and it puts a new system in.
Right.
Kind of like in the installing Windows over Windows on the PC side.
Yeah.
So it refreshes your system install.
10.4.10 because that worked great. You know?
Well, you can, depending on what disk your 10.4 is on. If it's a 10.4.3 disk or 10.4.6 disk, you can start there and then not go to the 10.4.11 if you want.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good advice. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
All right, have fun. Our next caller is Phil. From Fillmore, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
My question is dual booting. With Vista on the computer first and putting the XP back on it, or just dump Vista? What's the best option?
Dump Vista.
Well, how do you find the best?
Well,
yeah,
no,
what do you want to accomplish with the computer?
But the thing of it is, going backwards, I don't think Vista will let you go back to doing a dual
boot. You'd have to wipe the drive.
Yeah, or put a second hard drive in.
Yeah, and then you got to be able to tell it to switch between the two.
And actually, if you're going to dual boot, that's probably safer.
Yeah.
But in any case, is Vista simply not working for you?
Well, it's...
What a silly question. I withdraw it and apologize.
It's an oxymoron.
Well, the only possible answer is yes.
It's not going to work for my financial software, which I need for my business.
Right, right. If you're looking for your business, then what's most important is getting your business software to run. So I say, personally, you know, certainly back up everything that you've written already or that you've, you know, your own documents, your own financial records. back them up twice to make sure you've got a copy, and then wipe it out and put in XP. Well,
fortunately, the computer that has the Vista on it is a brand new computer, so I haven't put any investment of time and effort into that.
Then, but while you still can, buy a copy of XP, put it on there, and go.
Yep.
Okay, so...
You may run into the opposite problems. If it's too new a computer, they may not have made XP drivers for some of the devices.
That's true.
Yeah, but most of it, though, we've been able to find. I mean...
So you find something close enough?
I've actually upgraded a number of folks back to XP and, new Dells and everything
else. That's a phrase that shouldn't work in English, but does.
Yeah.
I've upgraded people back to XP.
Well, I can understand that. It's
a Daveism, as my wife puts it. But, yeah, I mean, I was just a client just this week, and UPS software, if you use any of that, 8.0 specifically has a flyer inside their disk that says, do not try to use this software with Vista because it will not work.
Right.
Right there it says it. QuickBooks had a number of issues and still does.
Happens to be what I'm talking about is QuickBooks.
Yeah. Again,
they claim the latest version of QuickBooks is Vista.
They can
compatible.
Claim until the cows come home. I got a number of folks that they're running around with Intuit right now because their data is all scrambled.
Yeah, and that and the cost of buying a new QuickBooks anyway, it doesn't...
Yeah, that's something else, too. Now they've lowered the license, up the price, so now you get a 3-user license, pay more...
Yeah, pay more for 3 than you used to for 5.
Right.
And then...
Well, I read their letter on that. We found that most people only have 3 users, so we reduced our license.
Yeah. And then you get to talk to 1-800, I don't speak English.
Yeah.
It's getting folks frustrated.
I think your best bet at this point is upgrade back to XP.
That's probably going to be my option instead of trying to go dual boot.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, it's easier that way. Dual boot is possible. It's easiest with a second hard drive in the computer.
The other real problem is if the two operating systems can see each other, you can see the other partition. Windows sometimes gets confused with the system folder and everything else, and often causes a screw up there. So you definitely want to avoid that if you can. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. I heard the music. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Roll your eyes at somebody else right now, mister. It's 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. What the heck was that?
Welcome back, everybody.
Isn't it Big Valley? Isn't it the theme song from Big Valley?
Probably.
That's what
I'm Francesco.
Like. I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, we're going to saddle up the horses and ride our way into the hearts and minds of America everywhere. Big question these days, who patches bugs faster, Apple or Microsoft? Apple's teasing commercials that imply that its software is safer than Microsoft's may not quite match the facts, according to new research revealed at the Black Hat Conference on Thursday. Researchers from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, not to be confused with the Rochester Institute of Technology, believe me, looked at how many times over the past 6 years the two vendors were able to patch, to have a patch available on a day, the day that the vulnerability became publicly known, which they call zero-day patch rate. They analyzed 658 vulnerabilities infecting Microsoft products and 738 infecting Apple. They looked only at high and medium risk bugs, according to the classification used by the National Vulnerability Database, said Stefan Free, one of the researchers involved in the study and a well-known 60s hippie. What they found is that, contrary to popular belief that Apple makes more secure products, Apple lags behind in patching. Apple was below 20 unpatched vulnerabilities in disclosure consistently before 2005, Free said. Since then, they are often, very often, above. So if you have Apple and compare it to Microsoft, the number of unpatched vulnerabilities are higher at Apple. It's generally good for vendors to have a software fix available when a vulnerability is disclosed, since hackers often try to find out where the program is in order to write malicious software to hack a machine. For a vendor to have a patch ready when the bug is detailed in public, it needs to get prior information from either its security analysts or external ones. Otherwise, the vendor has to hurry to create a patch, but that process can be lengthy. Given the vigorous testing needed to test the patch to ensure it does not conflict with other software, Apple only started patching zero-day vulnerabilities
in late 2003, Free said. We think that Apple has fewer vulnerabilities early on, and they were just surprised or not ready or not as attentive, Free said. It looks like Microsoft had good relationships earlier with the research community. Over the past few years, Microsoft has tried to cultivate a closer relationship with the security community in order to encourage researchers to give it a heads up about software problems. Apple, however, doesn't appear to have the same sort of engagement yet, and based on our findings, this is hurting them. Curiously, both vendors' abilities to have zero-day patches ready at disclosure seemed to dip in the 6 months before a major product release. That trend was most pronounced in 2004 and 2005. Fry theorized that the building to big software releases took away software engineer resources. This is an independent academic research, Fry said. Free said. Free Fry. When two vowels go walking, the first one does the talking. Okay. We knew that. So it's Free, not Fry. All right. And
can we say this on the radio?
We'll let Liz say that. We'll get there in just a minute. And when I'm reading, leave me alone. No, I'm just saying. And I see Steve has nothing to say about that one. He's fuming over there, but he doesn't seem to have anything to say because he can't find anything online that refutes that. Is apparently the prep. Don't you read these things when I send them out to you? Only the first one you left out. There's more coming, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I skim through them.
All right.
That's why I'm trying to get
We'll leave Steve fuming unanswering me, and we'll move on to Liz from Honey, I Falls. Welcome, Liz. Yeah. What's your question?
What's your husband?
I'll be nice.
Yeah.
I'll be real nice.
I was going to say, because what Rob put on the screen, we didn't want to say it over the air.
Oh, I think we can say it in this context. The man's a boob.
He was a boob.
See?
I came home or something, and he's like, do you know you have 63 viruses on your computer? And I've been trying to remove them, and it just won't work. And I'm like, what are you talking about? We have virus protection. I don't have 63 viruses on my computer. And I'm like, oh, God, you know. Right. And sure enough, he downloaded XP antivirus, which is one of the worst things to try to get off. If you want to remove it, it basically takes you to where you have to pay for. I'm not paying for anything. But the nice thing is if I reboot my computer, McAfee immediately removes the fake Trojan, but the program is still in my computer. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I kind of found a way to remove it, but there was like 400 steps, and I wouldn't even know where to begin to do that. I'd really mess something up. So how do you get rid of this XP antivirus?
Well, isn't that easy?
I know.
Because there's a number of programs we run, depending on what... Reason I say it's not easy, it depends on what version or iteration that you got.
Okay.
Because it can be complex where we literally take the hard drive out of the machine, we put it on our test bench, and start removing it that way.
Okay.
I don't want to be responsible for trying to tell you do this and that, and then totally screw up your machine and it costs you even more.
Right.
It's better that if you take it into a professional and have them do it.
Okay. All right, and so who would be those professionals?
My shop would be great.
And that would be where?
At 70 Empire Boulevard. It's called Enright PC. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and we deal with this type of stuff on a daily basis.
And will it take forever to remove it, or is it?
No, a couple hours.
Okay.
On the average, it takes a couple hours.
Of bench time, not necessarily elapsed time before you can pick it up again. We have to be careful about that.
There's very little while you wait anymore in the computer industry.
I mean, because I literally, put it on there and have to have it run this test. It's a series of tests, and it takes just my time alone getting it set up and running it takes a couple hours. And that's, like Steve said, not the actual time that the program runs.
Right.
That's in addition to it.
So what is this doing to my computer? Is McAfee kind of blocking it while I'm running it, or because
it's theoretically, yes. If McAfee is finding it each time, it's theoretically blocking it from running.
It's probably hidden in some of the restore files too.
Okay. Well, I tried everything, and there is.
Sometimes you can get rid of this stuff in safe mode. Like Norton was big on that. You can't run Norton antivirus in safe mode. But I need to, because that's when the virus isn't
running. Right. To tell you to run hijack this, I mean, you've got to know what you're turning off and eliminating there. I don't recommend it for the average person, because you could eliminate stuff that you actually need.
Yeah. So those fake antivirus and fake anti-spyware programs that pop up and say you need to buy this, you have to be really careful about those. They're fake messages. You know, at worst, just want your money. I guess at best, they just want your money. At worst, they're going to do even more horrible
and
things.
And I think the best thing to do is to prevent your husband from ever clicking on anything ever again, ever. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. At 51 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 55 minutes after the hour, hang on to your rocking chairs, boys and girls. Get your, all right, kiddies, get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa and sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. Because if we can slap and kick and beat them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, I'm ready.
Oh, I bet you are.
Oh, and this week, I'm actually helping a client.
Helping a client?
Helping a client by telling her husband to get rid of the Windows 95 machine!
Oh, my heavens.
This guy, I mean, God love him, and his wife, she's so patient. Like I say, I don't ever mention any names.
It's like Liz.
You know, you got to wake up and smell the coffee. I know that machine is still running, but, you know, every time, you know, you boot it up and it takes a half hour just to get to the Windows screen. Windows 95, hello, there's no updates. You could be literally ruining your other machines by getting viruses and everything else in. Get rid of it. Do your wife a favor and not put her through the stress of worrying whether you're getting stuff in there because her clients and everything else might get infected. It's a dead operating system. It has been. I know you love it. Put it up on a shelf and stare at the old Packer Bell even though it still runs. You just got to do it.
Just leave it running, and whenever you feel like a good game of solitaire, really, really slow, go to it.
And disconnect the Ethernet cable.
And disconnect the Ethernet. The simple reality is we all love those teddy bears we had as kids, but every once in a while, it's time to put them up on the shelf.
You just
got
to say,
yourself,
you know, it's time to say when, and when is now. You know, I mean, it's hello.
Or yesterday.
When is now? That's another one of those things you don't hear except on soundbites. All right, kiddies, that's it. We're giving Uncle Dave his injection. Wipe out your cocoa mugs. Get your jammies off, get back into your clothes, and we'll put Uncle Dave back up on the shelf for another hour next to that Packard Bell. And, and we will be back. It all comes full circle. I can segue into anything. We're done for this hour. We will be back on the other side of all the things you really listen to Wham for. The news, the weather, the sports. Rob Jason will be here with all of those things and give you all the latest to keep you involved in the world in which you truly live. On the other side of that, we'll be back with your second life, except that's, of course, already a copyrighted phrase now. To bring you a lot more news, weather, news and stuff about the computer world. Weather you can get on your machine, you don't need us for that. And we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 58 minutes after the hour. Back on the other side of the news with more of the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that, of course, is Soundbites. Only on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. Every week on Soundbites, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about Second Life because we had Wagner James Au, who was a terrific guest, and we have to have him back talking about Second Life. So the question was, are you in Second Life? 261 of you voted, tying it for number 260 in the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you who voted. Most of you have no idea what Second Life is, and only 15 of you are in there all the time. This week's poll, interesting little news article. IMAX Corporation said on Tuesday that it had hired TV distributor Northstar Media to get its supersized movies onto mobile phone screens and other digital platforms. Toronto-based IMAX said Northstar had acquired the rights to 21 titles and will distribute them to TV, VOD, which is video on demand, mobile and broadband platforms as the giant screen exhibitor's exclusive worldwide representative. IMAX films have already been released on DVD and Blu-ray. The deal with North Star Media represents the first time the Canadian exhibitor has aimed to migrate its library onto newer and emerging digital platforms. IMAX titles originally filmed and presented in high definition that North Star Media will handle include Tom Hanks Presents Magnificent Desolation, Walking on the Moon, Space Station, Into the Deep, and Blue Planet. The distribution pact was unveiled by Greg Foster, chairman and president of filmed entertainment at IMAX and North Star Media, co-president Andy Weir. So the question this week is IMAX movies on your cell phone. Your choices are brilliant, could be interesting, and what are you on and do you have more? Yeah. So far,
I'm sorry. Watching it on a little tiny screen versus watching it on a big...
Well, when you're standing in line somewhere, when you're waiting for a bus or you're waiting for your turn at the doctor, I find that a lot of times. I use my iPod for that.
Well, you're going to watch an IMAX movie, a movie that originally was 70 feet across.
I watch video podcasts.
And in 3D, you're going to watch that on your iPhone. You couldn't even watch that on an iPhone. That's still not big enough. Yep. You watch Magnificent Desolation, the bottom of the screen will be gray, mm-hmm. the top of the screen will be black, and that is all you will see.
That was a wonderful movie at the IMAX.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful at the IMAX.
Along with the sound.
Absolutely.
IMAX sound will literally blow your way.
Yeah, so unsurprisingly, 90% of you have said, what are you on and do you have more? 7% of you have been said it could be interesting. And 2 of you had some sort of spasmodic reaction and accidentally clicked brilliant. Once you're done with that, I know you're going to have more to say about this one. So if you look in the little yellow box underneath, you'll see a link that says, give us your opinion. If you click on that, it takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com. You ain't kidding, baby.
And you can then leave an opinion. Keep it clean. But that's what that's all about. While you're there, take a look at what I do. I put out a newsletter. You can search for it. I've got my own set of forums. It's only $15 a year. I have no idea why you're not a member. That's just plain silly. And then when you're done with that, come on back to the Soundbites page where we're all trying to figure out what the latest picture is in the Fun Stuff forum and join us there as well. In the meantime, we will go back to the phones. That's one of those ideas where I cannot believe somebody didn't say, what?
Yeah, bad night of drugs or something?
Exactly. Dude, I had this great idea, man.
So prolific.
No, check it out. IMAX on my phone. Okay.
Get a life. Nick, you do that too well.
Thank you very much.
Well, one of the weird things that happens is when they go the other way. They take a standard movie and blow it up to IMAX. I remember seeing Spider-Man 3
in
IMAX.
Right.
You could see the seams in his costumes. You could see the anchor points.
Yeah, they're really
so big.
yeah. I saw a couple of Cirque du Soleil things on IMAX. They were astonishing. And the Magnificent Desolation just completely blew me away. But it really needs to be filmed for IMAX to be really useful. And I can't see. I'm astigmatic, so I can hardly see the 3D effect ever. All right, our next caller is Susan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Susan. What's your question?
Hi, I have a question on .Mac.
By the
way, I love your program.
Thank you so much.
I use .Mac, been using it for a long time, individual membership. It expires in 7 days. I want to become part of my son's .Mac family, and he said we cannot renew until my membership expires. So it expires next Sunday. He's pretty good with computers. He's like the expert, so I don't question that. But does that mean that he can't make me part of his family membership until next Monday, which is 8 days, and then everything I have will be bounced away from my .Mac email address?
You may have to call Apple to get your account name merged into his account because you've got two separate accounts now.
Yes.
You could renew your account. You can renew his account. But if he tries to add a name to his account, it's going to say that name is already taken, which technically it is by you. So you may have to get Apple to merge those accounts together.
Or how about wait until the day after it expires, and then he can add it, or would it still always be?
It would still always, Apple, when you create a .Mac account name, Apple reserves that basically forever in case you ever come back and want to renew again, you can get your old address back.
So to call Apple, can I get away with calling the Apple store? I'm way far out of...
No, you have to call Apple itself. 800-SOS-APPLE. Okay. And make sure you use an O and not a zero. Nasty things happen when you call S0S.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay, now, are they going to charge me to talk to them?
They shouldn't, no. Especially if your .Mac subscription is still in force. In fact, you could even post this in the Apple support forums on .Mac itself.
Okay, I'll try that. Thank you so much.
It's interesting, though.
Thanks.
I wonder, Susan. Wearing two hats, I wonder if they'll let her do that because she's changing from two subscriptions to one subscription.
Right.
They might not want to let her do that. But you should be able to merge a basic membership into a family membership.
Well, half a loaf is better than no loaf.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I
mean,
yep. And it is kind of neat. You know, Apple has done this on a lot of their family subscriptions. You know, it's $100 for one and it's $200 for five. So, you know, five is cheaper than two.
Right, right.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Mary from Penfield.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mary. Apparently, I'm choking to death here in front of you. Go right ahead.
No problem. 2002, I bought a Gateway computer with the computer and the screen.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks ago, I got a notice on my AOL from McAfee saying my virus scan wouldn't work any longer unless I upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
Went into that, and they said I needed more memory. I only have like 128 megabytes of memory. Called Gateway, and they said for $40 I could buy more memory from them, but to install it, it would come in the mail, and I'd have to unscrew the back of the computer.
Right.
Well, I don't think this gal knew anything about computers in the screen. It's not a laptop, but it's in the screen
because right.
there's nothing to unscrew in the back of it.
Well, there is, but...
it's hiding somewhere.
Yeah, not for the average person. Mary, what operating system are you running?
XP, Windows.
With only 128 megs of RAM, that's got to be really, really slow.
Well, it is, because I'm on dial-up and I don't have Excel or PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
And you're running Windows XP?
Right.
Yeah. A gigabyte is sort of our recommendation for XP.
Well, but what she's saying is she only does email in the net.
The thing that is, though, is the average person can't install it, and if it's not under warranty...
Well, it's not. It's from 2002.
Yeah, then you'd have to take... I'd advise you to take it to a service place and have them do it. Because it's not your typical case where you can just quick pop it off like they can on an average machine. You've literally got to break the back part of that open to get the memory in it.
And it's worth it because I'm not getting virus scan anymore. Is that the problem?
Well, no.
Well,
it'll help improve the performance.
Make the computer run faster. You don't necessarily have to renew the McAfee you've got. You can use a different program.
AVG would be better. Yeah, it's free.
Or Avast.
There are free antivirus and anti-spyware programs you can use. But they may need more than 128 themselves.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do I take it and where do I get these free programs or whatever?
Again, you can bring it to my shop, NRIPC, at 70 Empire Boulevard, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. We can not only install the memory for you, but put the whole array of Security Tango programs onto your machine.
I've just found the instructions. Remove the case cover. Remove the blower assembly.
Oh, yeah.
Like an average person
can
remove
that. Yeah, right. Without well, anybody can remove it.
That's true. Bring it back in is the trick.
Unplug it to bring it to you.
There you go. There you go. Now you're talking. Good luck, Mary.
How long would you have it for? Because I'm looking for a job, so I need this thing every day.
Tell you what, call the office, and then this way we can schedule it around your time frame.
And is this an expensive thing to do?
No.
Okay. Thanks so much.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye.
Certainly would cost less than a Lamborghini.
Yeah, definitely. And
I'm just
then, you know, I mean, for her to try to sit there.
The Gallardo or the Diablo?
Yeah. Our next caller is Gary on a cell phone. Gary, you're not driving, are you?
Negative.
Excellent.
Okay, I have my motherboard fried. I purchased a new motherboard, installed that motherboard. Now, it's my understanding I have two hard drives. I need to wipe those clean to be able to install the drivers for the new motherboard.
No, you've only got to wipe the C drive. If you've got a second drive there, so say it's the D drive.
Do you dual boot to these two drives?
No, I don't quite know what you're saying, but I don't.
You only ever boot into one operating system and the other drive is just for storage.
That's right.
Okay. Then you only need to wipe out the drive you boot from.
Why would you need to wipe it at all? Can't you just load the new drivers?
Well, you can if you have them on disk or whatever.
If your motherboard fried, why are you wiping it? Why not just put the hard drive back in with that motherboard, reinstall Windows over Windows? You're going to have to re-register it because it's a different motherboard, and you should be all set to go.
That would be back to the question. It's easiest to wipe the hard drive and install Windows clean.
Right. No, if he doesn't have all the drivers, he's going to...
That new motherboard should have come with its own driver disk for the devices on that motherboard.
Right. I mean, and to go and find all those updates and everything else, it's a pain in the butt. You know, and just put it over itself.
Okay, so let me tell you what I did already. I already reinstalled XP Pro, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With the motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I was told... The smartest thing to do would be, because there may be glitches with this motherboard and XP Pro, unless I get all my data. I have a bunch of QuickBooks data and important stuff I need to get off of these hard drives. Wipe that hard drive off and then reinstall again XP Pro with the appropriate drivers for the motherboard to guarantee later on down the line I won't have these little glitches.
Well, there's no guarantee that you won't have glitches.
Right.
In fact, we'll guarantee you will have glitches.
Yeah, and
but you do not need to erase the hard drive.
Yeah, no, you don't have to erase it. I mean, just putting it over itself, all it's going to do is update some drivers, because before it had information, say, about a motherboard X. And now you're reinstalling it, and it's going to verify that now you have motherboard Z. And it just updates just those drivers. Your video drivers aren't going to change because, you know, if you've got a particular video card or a network card, you know, say that you're putting in, it'll all be the same. Or if it is, it's, you know, just getting other versions. You can save yourself a lot of headaches just by putting the motherboard in, put the original equipment back in other than the motherboard, and just load Windows over Windows. That way your data's still going to be there and everything else.
Well, but the thing is, he's already reinstalled XP.
That's right.
So what he's saying is, his friends told him, now he has to uninstall everything and reinstall again.
Yeah.
No, you don't. You should be fine now.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 21 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites.
For our previous caller, Susan, who was wanting to upgrade her single .Mac account into her son's family account. That's usually the other way around, though. I did find a link on Apple's website for you to do it yourself. You do have to wait till your account expires so it can be added to that family account, but it's now on our website.
At soundbites.org, and that's a bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Hey, guess what? Microsoft's brand power has been in sharp decline over the past 4 years, an indication the company is losing credibility and mind share in the U.S. business owners and users, according to a recent study by market research firm Core Brand. I know, what a shock. According to the Core Brand Power 100 2007 study, which polled about 12,000 U.S. business decision makers, Microsoft dropped from number 12 in the ranking of the most powerful U.S. company brands in 2004 to number 59 last year. Back in 1996, they ranked number one. Core Brand measures brand power using four criteria. It first rates the familiarity of a company's brand. Once a company has a certain level of familiarity, it is ranked according to three attributes of favorability, which are overall reputation, perception of management, and investment potential. While Microsoft brand is still eminently recognizable, the company is declining in all three favorable attributes, he said. What's significant in Microsoft's case is the decline has been consistent over a number of years and has plunged dramatically in a brief time. When you see something decline with increasing velocity, it is a concern, he said.
All right, with that in mind.
Yeah.
And given the other news that came out that, you know, Microsoft now is going to dictate, oh, what is it, by June of this year, supposedly XP is going to stop and by the end of the year. Losing their clout, how do they think they're going to dictate to other bigger companies that, oh, you will automatically switch over to this because we're going to do it? The other companies are going to say, up yours.
Business researchers have been positing for many, many, many years that Microsoft could not compete effectively if they were not a monopoly. They just haven't got the ability to compete on a level playing field. So
So I guess we're going to start seeing whether or not that's true.
I mean, they lost the battle. Remember back with Windows 98 and ME when they came out?
Mm-hmm.
ME was off the shelf. 98 was still around because most of the manufacturers and companies said, no, we're not switching over to this piece of junk. And it sat there and then disappeared. 98 was still around because nobody wanted to spend the money. And in today's time, to sit there and tell major companies and everybody else, it's like them coming to you at RIT and saying, you will no longer use XP. You're going to have to upgrade to Windows Vista. That means you've got to buy all new machines with more power, more hard drive, faster machines and everything else. Oh, and some of your software is not going to work.
Right.
Just because we got to sell this operating system and it doesn't do anything more for you than XP did.
Right. And that's why a lot of home users are switching to Macs. They're switching to Linux. They're sticking with XP. They just don't want Vista.
It's easy to argue that Microsoft is a very powerful company. I'm surprised to see them slip until you explained that they were talking about favorable marks. But I would say, too, that with great power comes great responsibility.
And yeah, they missed that part entirely. Yeah.
And they have been abusing their power by being irresponsible.
I mean, the average, in today's time, products. I mean, people are getting laid off left and right. And to sit there and tell companies, oh, yeah, you've got to spend all this money. Heck, they're lucky if they can keep benefits and everything else.
They may
going.
Have to hire more engineers to make the switch to Vista. That could be good for the economy.
Well, yeah, it could be. Or it could be more companies just simply going out of business.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Marianne, all the way out there in Springwater, New York. Welcome, Marianne. What's your question?
I have a video on my desktop on my computer, and I was wondering if it's possible to get that off of there. Well, not off, but save it onto CD or whatever to play it on my television. Is that possible?
It is possible if you already have the file on your machine.
Yes.
It is possible. You just need the right software and hardware to do that. You need to have either a CD or a DVD burner.
I don't have that on my computer.
Yeah, and
you
got to have that. That's a minimum. And then you got to have the software that either comes with or at least runs that DVD.
The other thing you can do, depending on your television, is you can plug your computer to your television as a monitor and then view it that way.
I can't do that either. Right. What if I brought it into a shop and had somebody do it for me? Is that possible for somebody to do that?
Yeah, we can do something like that.
Would I have to leave my computer?
How big is the file? Do you know?
I have no idea.
See, if you could get that file onto, say, like a jump drive or something like that, or yeah, if you brought it in, we could quick suck it off to one of our portable drives.
Yeah, I got it on a laptop right now.
Yeah, we could suck it off quickly and put it onto our machine and then burn it to a DVD.
How old is the computer you have it on now?
I think 01 I bought it.
Yeah, so most modern computers in the last 4 or 5 years have at least CD burners, and many of them have DVD burners now.
Yeah,
but something that old may not.
I didn't figure I would need it. I had a regular computer with all that on it, and I gave it to my daughter when I got the laptop. And, of course, it doesn't work for her right now, so I couldn't do it on hers.
So your system is a laptop?
Yes.
Yeah, if you bring it into Dave. Now, the problem is, I mean, none of this stuff is instantaneous, so it's going to take a while to do. And Dave has a whole shop that he runs, helping lots and lots of people who've been waiting days for theirs.
Right.
So you can't expect instant service from any vendor.
Right. Yeah.
But give him a call during the week and see what you can set up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give us a call.
Can I have that number?
Yes.
I have a hard time finding things in the telephone
no
book.
Problem. It's NRIPC at 442-4843.
What is the last four numbers?
442-4843.
4843.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
We had a customer once that took a box, a great uncle passed away or something, and they took a box of 8mm film. Mm-hmm. To a company to have them convert it to DVD. And apparently the guy had like a, what did they call them back then? Not a burlesque film.
In the middle
of all the family portraits.
Sure.
They just put it on the middle of the disc with all the
very
rest of
nice.
Them.
Nice.
Hey, you know.
Very nice. Stag film. Yeah, 50s stag film.
It is what it is.
With the socks and the black masks. And so yeah. I've heard. Yeah. So I've been told.
See, how do you know?
I just heard that somewhere.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember where. Our next caller, we're moving on now. Our next caller is Jim from Chi-Lai, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Good morning,
morning, gentlemen. When I went to use my computer this morning, my monitor was turned off. In other words, nothing was on the screen, but it was flashing on the on and off button, and it said the monitor is working, but it was getting no signal from my CPU unit.
Yep.
Was the computer turned on, or was the computer turned off?
Initially, the computer was turned off.
That's why.
That's normal. So the message on the monitor is correct. It's getting no signal from the computer.
Correct. So then I turned it back on, and which I had a hard time doing initially. It took me 3 or 4 presses of the button to get it on, but it finally came on the CPU unit, and I got the same message on my screen. Now, mind you, I always leave my computer running continuously. I never shut it off at night, so it was off.
So it shut itself off?
It shut itself off, right. So when I turned it back on, I'm still getting the same.
And it was hard to turn on. I'm power supply, probably.
Could be, yeah.
The CPU unit is turned on now, and it's working, but I'm still getting that yellow, red, blue box then on the monitor saying.
Then it's not working.
Right. Correct. It's not getting a signal.
What I would suggest you start with is tracing the cables coming out of the back of the monitor. One will go to the power supply, to the wall plug or your whatever, correct. And the other will go right to the computer. Make sure that's tight in both ends, assuming that one end is not built.
Do you have another monitor to try around?
Yes, I did. I put another monitor on. It was a different brand, but I put a different monitor on, and it's still on that monitor. It had no signal.
Then you've got something wrong with that box.
The computer itself.
What it sounds like, right. Since the machine itself did turn on eventually, what it sounds like, first I would turn that off immediately. Right. It sounds like the video card.
Well,
but it could be any one of a dozen things.
I'd lean toward the power supply first because he said it was hard to get it to come back on again.
Maybe.
Correct.
But if it is coming on and not getting the motherboard.
Could be. True, yeah, you're right, Steve. It could be, low power.
Yeah, you're going to take it to somebody. I'm sorry, right, okay. Jim. That's the story.
Oh, that's great, guys. I appreciate your advice.
Yep, thanks. Was he actually happy that we told him he had to take it to somebody?
Yeah.
That's my favorite kind of caller. Get him back on the line. Yeah. Let's answer more of his problems. All right, our next caller is Mike, also from Chi-Lai, New York. Tell me you had the same problem, Mike. Then we'll know it was a big power spike somewhere in Chi-Lai.
Different program.
All right.
No pun intended. My question is, I wanted to know what would be the best way to, I have to back up 2 machines. One's overdue and I'm being screamed at by your favorite Microsoft Live One.
Yeah.
Back myself up. The general question for both machines is, and the other one's got a problem, DVD versus external hard drives, or what do you think? I mean, I buy a lot of those USB flash drives, but I need 10 tons of them.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Okay.
Mike, the first thing is, what are you going to back up?
Yeah, how much information?
The best thing is only back up your data.
Right.
Not the entire, first you can't back up the whole operating system while it's running. You would need some other way to do that that doesn't involve your hard drive running, booting up. Because Microsoft won't let you back up a running version of Microsoft. You will miss some files.
Good. Good. I don't want to back them up anyway.
Right. Yeah. You only want to back up your data. So often, for most people, unless you're doing large video or audio files, that will all fit on one jump drive. Certainly a 4 gig, maybe a 2 gig, maybe a 1 gig.
Mm-hmm.
I got one USB flash drive.
Yes, it's the same.
4 gig.
Yeah.
I'm concerned that I've got more information than that. Just it's been piling up for a year, and
You can usually test that if it's all in my documents. But if you right click on it and select properties, it'll tell you how much data is in that folder. Okay. But the other thing that you can do is certainly to buy an external drive that plugs into either the USB port of that machine or onto the network if you have a home network.
No, I don't have a home network.
Then you can get an external USB drive.
External USB.
That plugs into that machine.
Okay.
And is recognized as a drive. It really kind of thinks it's a gigantic jump drive, but you don't really care what it thinks of it as.
And that would be smarter than buying DVDs, would it not?
Well,
it's more convenient.
Exactly. Yeah. Which means you're more likely to back up more often.
Yeah.
Okay, safer, that type of thing?
Well,
not necessarily
safe.
Well, actually, a DVD could be safer than a hard drive because it's write once, it's less chance of being erased.
Okay,
but
it's write once. rewrite.
Or you get rewritable.
Well, if you get rewritable, you have to manually erase it to write to it again.
That costs a double, triple the money, too, yeah?
Yeah, and they're more expensive, and it's more tedious to back up onto CD
or DVD.
Which
means, you know yourself, Mike, you'll back up less often.
Yep.
Yeah, well, this is the first shot since I've had this for about 8 months.
Exactly.
The other thing you can do is you can use a backup program. Most of the external hard drives you buy come with some sort of a backup program that will automatically and periodically back up your changed files. So say every day at 5 o'clock, back up all the stuff I changed.
Now there's
so
also,
it can do it for you instead of you remembering yourself.
Right. There's also Amazon S3, 15 cents a gigabyte or some silly thing that lets you back up to the net. So you might want to take a look at that. If you go to Google and look up Amazon S3, S as in Sam, it'll tell you all about it. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. All right, before we get back to the phones, Adobe is working on an update to its Flash Player software that will address a widespread vulnerability found on hundreds of thousands of websites. Isn't that good to know? They're working on an update that's already on hundreds of thousands of websites. The issue, first reported in December by Google researcher Rich Cannings, allows attackers to use buggy Shockwave Flash files in order to attack web surfers. Using what is known as a cross-site scripting attack, criminals could create fake phishing pages or, much worse, gain access to online banking sessions or web accounts of victims in some situations. After Cannings went public with his findings, Adobe and other software vendors fixed their development tools so they no longer create the vulnerable Flash files, but there are still more than 500,000 of these files posted on different sites on the internet. Because of the amount of work it would take to clean up the mess, Cannings has been encouraging Adobe to make changes to its player software that would nullify these attacks. The fix is being developed and will be available, and I quote, soon. So, if I were you for the next, year? I wouldn't run any Flash files. Oh, wait, that's of you two.
Everybody, yeah.
All right, our next caller is Randall from Greece, New York. Welcome, Randall. What's your question?
Yeah, how you doing? I have a DVD burner I had put in my computer, which is fine. Everything's running great. I can bring it
hey,
up.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Oh, sorry. I bring up movies either under Nero or under Windows Media Player. You know, just a regular store-bought DVD, put it in, boom, comes up. I can play these. Picture's fine, everything's fine, but I have no audio.
And it's not running great.
I'm sorry?
You get audio from other programs, you know, music player.
Yep, audio on everything else, on the web, on, you know, I could play a music DVD or a CD. And
there's an audio cable that needs to go from the DVD player to your motherboard to pass audio into the computer.
Yeah.
Ah.
You got to open up the case and make sure that that cable
is there. And
a quick
and
way to
tight,
find
connect it tight.
Mm-hmm.
Quick way to check it is if you put on a lot of DVD players a headset on the front of the DVD player, you can plug it in there.
Okay.
And just see if you get sound out of that.
Okay.
Right, because it could be that the DVD player is bad.
Yeah, it's just brand new.
That doesn't matter. They make a billion of them every once in a while. They
usually
get a bad one.
But if it's playing the DVD, then like Steve said, a lot of places don't hook up the cables anymore. I've had to put cables on so many of them.
It's supposed to be able to do digital audio over the data cable.
It's
not always.
To.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know. I checked out, of course, all the obvious. Nothing's muted. Nothing, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
All you got to do is turn your machine off, pop open that case, and see what's there. If there's no connecting, if there's no little,
three cables
wire
on the back of the optical drive. The power cable, which is a little narrow white with four wires on it, the data cable, which is usually gray and
32.
Like 2 inches wide, and then a little tiny, very, very thin audio cable.
And that'll usually gray.
Right from, that'll come right from the back of the player to the motherboard.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
Usually on the motherboard, it's labeled aux in or sometimes CD in.
Okay. I will check that.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Randall. It does astonish me. Well, yeah, because you're right. In a lot of cases, the digital audio should work fine.
Yeah,
but the analog audio needs the analog connector.
Yeah. Well, and it may well be that the version of Nero he's got and the version of Windows Media Player he's got is not set up to do digital. That's easy enough, sure.
All right, our next caller is Al from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
How you doing? Windows 2003 server question for you. At the login prompt where it asks you to hit Control-Alt-Delete, put in the password. As soon as I put the password in, it looks like it loads the profile, and then a second later it goes to saving settings and locks it back down again, where it asks me to hit Control-Alt-Delete, put the password in again.
If you're really lucky, someone played a joke on you and put a logout command on your login script.
Okay.
If you're not lucky, your profile's corrupted.
Yeah.
Right.
And I even tried logging in as a different user and did the same thing.
And now you do have a problem.
The profile table is corrupted.
Right. It could be that the entire profile table has been corrupted. There's no...
Can you do a... Well, probably not. Can you do a remote login from another computer?
No, because I tried... At one point in time, I was able to get in, and then I tried to ping the IP address of that server, and it came back with no reply.
Yeah, the problem here, I'm afraid, Al, is that without sitting down in front of the machine, we can't begin to diagnose where the problem immediately lies. So I'm afraid your best bet at this point is to take it to a reputable vendor and let them play around with it. That's really about all you got. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, Meaning Francesco, and you at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 53 minutes after the hour, we'll be holding down Uncle Dave because we have Bill from Pittsford.
That doesn't say what I think it does.
It does. Go ahead, Bill. You make him angry.
Well, the situation is I've got one old PC that still has Millennium on it.
Right.
So every time I look and I try to decide between XP and Vista, I kind of freeze up. Because
well, and I think your machine would, too, if you put Vista on it.
Well, then he'd have two comparable machines. If he goes Vista, he'd have ME.
The old ME or the new ME.
Yeah.
Well, but basically, what I'm talking about is really getting a new machine at this point.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
And I don't want to get millenniumized again, mm-hmm. you know, by getting XP and then finding a year from now that everything is shifted to Vista and there's no more XP support, that kind of thing.
That is going to be a problem.
Well, XP support goes through 2011, is it?
But yeah. That doesn't mean new drivers will be written and et cetera, et cetera. Right. And that's where Microsoft really catches you.
I know, that's got you in a bind.
Right. If you buy a machine today, chances are very good that it will run either Vista or XP.
Right.
If you buy a new printer in a year or a new something else in a year, it is very likely there will not be an XP driver for it.
So if you're going to stick PC-based for the long term and you're really dealing with a blank slate, then probably you're kind of better off looking a couple of years down to go with Vista at this point.
Well, I don't know if better off is the right term, because but it's certainly...
Well, I think we
wait until Windows 7.
Yeah, I mean, we got to wait and see what happens with Windows 7 because Microsoft is scrambling to come out with Operating System 7, which I think is going to be a total turnabout and get you back towards more looking like Windows XP, because one of the biggest complaints with Vista was people didn't like the way things had been moved around, changed around, said you got to spend more money for something that looks like XP on steroids.
Given Microsoft's track record, do you want to wait for Windows 7?
I'll stick with XP.
Well, right, but he's looking to buy a machine now. He's got ME. Poor guy.
Yeah, but a new box. I mean, even if he positions himself to get a high-end machine, say, good graphics, 2 gig of memory, mm-hmm. 350 gig hard drive, DVD burner, 63-in-1 card reader, and still does XP, he's still in a good position a couple years down the road, whatever operating system comes out that he'll still be able to do.
No question. But in the meantime, if he wants to buy a peripheral, he may not find one that has an XP driver. That's all I'm saying. I would buy XP too. Bill, if I were in your shoes, I'd buy XP.
Yep.
But you need to be aware that there may be some peripherals you cannot buy next year or the year after.
But in terms of just trying to rescue this old machine, which I put new hard drives in and a lot of things over the years, to try to keep that one going a little bit with a new operating system.
How much RAM do you have?
I've got 2.
Gig?
2 gigs, yeah.
How fast is the processor?
It's a 2 gigahertz.
And how big is your hard drive?
120.
Vista is probably not what you want. You want XP. Get it. Get XP and put it on that machine.
And you know what, Nick, though? I think a lot of companies are still going to keep the XP drivers going because, look, you can get a lot of machines now, even old HPs and all that, and they're still coming with the Windows 98 drivers
on it. That's
true. something that was very popular, a lot of your major companies are still going to have the drivers out there.
Yep.
Because I found an old camera that I was putting on a person, and it still had the old drivers out there.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, yeah. I would, if you want to keep that machine, certainly would run Vista, but I do not recommend it. Yeah. I would suggest you get a copy of XP, put it on that new machine.
Mm-hmm.
You can do an upgrade from ME to XP, although I'm not sure I would recommend that. I would recommend backing up all of your data at least twice.
Wiping.
And then wipe and install clean.
Okay, but for a new one, it's you run some risks if you would go with XP today about compatibility down the road, but it wouldn't be a totally stupid thing to get a brand new machine today with XP on it, not Vista.
Right. Assuming that the new machine will run XP.
If you buy Vista now, you have compatibility problems now. If you buy XP now, you'll have compatibility problems later.
Right.
Maybe
later, yes.
But by then, of course, version Service Pack Windows 3 7. For Vista will be out, and by then they may have fixed at least some of the problems.
No, System 7 will be out.
Look at Microsoft's track record. 10 years between operating systems that work.
They could take
that work, yes, that's the key.
Right.
They could take Vista and just try to put some of the stuff that was in it and change them.
You know what they can do with it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can't
say
that
on radio.
Anyway,
I'm glad we've confused you completely, Bill.
I'll say it again. Ubuntu.com.
Ubuntu.com. Stick Ubuntu on it and be a happy little camper. All right. That makes us done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in, particularly those whom we were allowed to confuse. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Next week, call earlier and more often. I particularly want to thank Chris Reich, who, again, he does this every week. The man just does not learn. He comes in here every week, and he gives of his time and his talent and his expertise to do a truly professional recording of our show and get it up on the web. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, who also apparently does not learn and comes in here week after week for no discernible reason, just to be abused by us, because he apparently can't stay home and abuse himself. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back next week with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.